Welcome to another episode of Daughters of Mormonism. I'm your host, Sybil. Today I want to explore the idea from some of the comments from episode 18, Looking for Balance, Courtney's story. There's an exchange between an anonymous commenter and Courtney that really caught my attention. Here's what they said. Anonymous. I really like what you said about how life is bigger than doing the church thing. I really think you're right. The church thing is good at taking up all your time. But then when do you live? I mean, really live. Courtney, I've been thinking about what you said about the church taking up all our time, and I do feel that it's not exactly what Zion means to me. How can anything that adds stress to an already stressful life, when time is so precious, be an inherent good? I've really struggled with this, especially when I want to do other things with my family in exchange for that time that I think would benefit us more as spiritual or just human beings. Anonymous. You know, the church really does add a lot of stress. In addition to taking up so much time. It's like the men are so busy with meetings that they can't possibly be husbands or fathers, except for maybe a couple of hours a week. And the women are given a huge to be a good Mormon woman list in addition to callings and often children that we fall into a space of pretending and surviving. I've been thinking about these comments ever since they were posted. It seems that it's so easy to be a busy Mormon. And it's so easy to feel like being busy means that we're righteous, means that we're doing it right, means that we're good people. I know I've certainly fallen into this mode of thought, and as I've thought about it for the past little while, I'm starting to see strong echoes throughout the Mormon culture. I know that the idea of busy equaling success is also part of the American mindset, but to me it seems that it is especially strong in the Mormon lifestyle. Like many of you, I didn't get to have a lot of time with my father while I was growing up because he was away at church meetings for much of the evenings, and then during the day, he was at work. Some of my younger siblings feel that they never really got to know him when they were children because of his long-term involvement in the stake presidency. We say that no success can compensate for failure in the home, but it seems that actually what we mean is that no success can compensate for failure in the home unless it's success in the church. For example, I remember sitting down with my mother and sisters to watch a church-distributed film entitled Wives and Daughters of the First Presidency. It was a compilation of panels and interviews with the wives and daughters of Hinckley, Monson, and Faust from the BYU Women's Conferences during 1996 and 1999. Watching Marjorie twinkle her humor was engaging, of course, but I was increasingly disturbed with the responses of Monson's wife and daughter. The wife spoke to the daughter to tell her how she was her partner in raising the children and keeping the house going, and that it was the friendship of her daughter that she so depended on. Sister Monson also told of how her husband would come home late and set down his briefcase on his desk and then say, "Some crackers and cheese would be nice," and off she would go to get him a snack, and then she would let him work on his important church work during the evenings when he was home. Where was the marriage? Where was the father? In the October 2010 women's broadcast for General Conference, Monson confirmed how little he was there for his family. He said, "I remember never being home on Christmas. I remember how sweet my wife was to understand. I was out visiting the widows, 84. And how they welcomed me, each one. Tommy is here. Tommy is here. But what about your children, Tommy? Your children who spent Christmas after Christmas and year after year of their childhood without much of a father. What about them? What about your wife?" You see, no success can compensate for failure in the home unless it's success in the church. Be a good bishop, and it doesn't matter what kind of father you were. You could even become the leader of the entire church, and that would mean you did it right. Even if your wife and eldest daughter had a closer relationship with each other than either of them had with you. It's kind of a distressing example because it comes right from the top. And it's held up as an example. We're to look to our leaders to see how to live and how to be good. It's distressing. And I know that there's this long, impossible list of what it takes to be a good Mormon woman. I know it's held up as an impossible ideal, but it's still held up. It's still brought toward us, often. I know the things that I've seen on that list include having lots of kids, sewing all their clothes, making them nutritious meals from scratch, including bread from wheat that I ground myself, being thin and fit and attractive and having my hair and makeup always done, being successful in some way, but still, of course, being entirely focused on my children, having my children be smart, talented, and involved in school activities and church activities, having a clean and well-decorated house, which I decorated myself, of course, always being in a good mood with a happy face, not a hint of depression, having family home evening every week, oh, and not to mention family prayer morning and night and family scripture study, not to mention taking time with each child to make sure that they're receiving the spiritual nurturing and motherly guidance that they need, getting my kids to church on time every week, fulfilling multiple callings, and preparing and giving excellent lessons. I have to take a detour here really quick. There was a ward I was in where the bishop's wife would always make gourmet treats to bring for every lesson she taught for Sunday school, where she was the gospel doctrine teacher. It was crazy to me when I actually stopped and thought about it, because here she was, the bishop's wife, so he was gone every Sunday morning to go to all of his endless early morning meetings, while she got her five kids ready to go, not to mention preparing the lesson and making these gourmet treats enough for quite a large class. And we had 9 a.m. church. This woman really excelled at being this ideal, exemplary Mormon woman. So back to the list. So in addition to fulfilling callings and giving of my time and energy at any time that it's asked, I also need to plant a garden and can the produce that is left over. I need to do my genealogy and my family history, and I need to go to the temple once a month, or actually make that once a week. I need to do missionary work with neighbors and family and serve multiple missions during my lifetime. I need to get my kids to primary young men, young women activities. I need to get them to scouts and get my daughters to activity days. Oh, and I need to have a date night once a week with my husband. Better make that a date to the temple. That way we'll kill two birds with one stone, where we'll build our beautiful, wonderful relationship while we sit on opposite sides of a room. I could go on and on with this list. I think we've all encountered various versions of this throughout our encounter with Mormonism. Being too busy and having too little time to just be seems to be a systemic problem within Mormonism and within the American culture as well. A little while ago, I visited my family and took my niece for a walk around the block. We stopped and talked with some of the neighbors who were out on their porch. When we got back to the house, I asked my mom about them. She knew their names, but wasn't very involved with them, even though they only lived two houses down. Why? Well, my mom explained, because they weren't active members. So they weren't at church on Sunday. So they weren't where all the busyness and connecting and networking was taking place. This means they would require even more time to get to know. Time which was simply not to be had. There wasn't enough time to go and get to know neighbors who weren't at church. So we don't get to know our non-member or inactive neighbors. Wait, unless it's a project, right? Because we need to make sure that we're reaching out to them to offer them the gospel. So our days are filled, our lives are filled, our Sundays are filled. Whatever time we have, whatever time we leave open, whatever time we're not consciously claiming for some other purpose, the busyness rushes in and finds a million ways to fill it. So maybe it's time to simplify and reclaim our lives, to say no to extra commitments and projects, to say no to callings, to say no to another meeting, to say no to taking our children to another activity, but instead to stay home and be a family. Maybe it's time to figure out our real priorities and then let the million other things fall and just be in this moment, today, now, rather than rushing on to the next thing and the next and the next and the next in a quest for some kind of busy perfection. As I said earlier, I've fallen into this busy mindset as well. In fact, Daughters of Mormonism has taken over more of my life than I can afford to give. It's almost a full-time job, just without the pay. And I'm finding that for the sake of my health and my family relationships, I need to change my part in this project. What this means is that this podcast is going to be undergoing some big restructuring. During the next couple of months, while we're figuring out what these changes will look like, we'll be publishing every other week instead of every week. I assume that a lot of you listen to this podcast through iTunes. This means that I have no idea how many people are actually listening. I only noticed that the hits on the website itself are steadily going down. I'm wondering if this means that interest in the podcast is waning. And if it is, perhaps this is a good time to wrap up the podcast. Maybe I should finish what I have in my editing folder and we could be finished. But I'm guessing that there are more of you out there than I know, and that maybe this podcast is filling a need. If this podcast is worthwhile for you, would you please let us know in the comments? And also let us know where the need is being fulfilled. This will help us as we are looking for ways to restructure and figure out what our focus is going to be as we continue Daughters of Mormonism. Thanks for listening to Daughters of Mormonism. I invite you to respond at daughtersofmormonism.blogspot.com. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the music.